When I was courting my wife many years ago, Mr. Barron teased me with the following verse in Proverbs 30 and verse 18. And I'm going to read the King James Version. He may remember that day when he teased me with this verse because I showed up in church sitting next to this nice lady who eventually became my wife. And he said, "There be three things which are too wonderful for me, yet four which I know not, the way of an eagle in the air, the way of a serpent on a rock, the way of a ship in the midst of a sea, and the way of a man with a maid." Well, the way of a man with a maid is indeed quite a marvelous thing, and it's a challenge to understand. It is the marvel of the marital relationship that mirrors, then, our relationship with God. And as mankind increases in knowledge over the years, we discover more and more about ourselves. And in so doing, we discover more and more about God. And then we look to the Bible and we realize that the knowledge that we needed was right there in front of us all the time. Doctors and researchers have discovered some amazing things about the human body, how it's built, how it has amazing capacity to heal, to reproduce, to perform fantastic feats, whether it's running a marathon of 26 miles, or swimming the English Channel, which is about 20 miles wide, or climbing Mount Everest, which is over 29,000 feet tall. Researchers have also discovered something about people's emotional makeup. This provides some explanation as to why people do what they do. Well, my wife and I were in a Crown Super bookstore in San Diego during the Feast of Tabernacles in 1997. And I spotted a book I had heard about for years but had never read. You might have heard the book. It was a New York Times bestseller top 10 list. And the book is entitled His Needs, Her Needs. It's by Dr. Willard Harley, and it's about marital relationships. Well, the book was in a special display, and I was curious. I picked up the book, and the name of the author seemed vaguely familiar, and I thought it was because I had heard of the book before. Well, I flipped open the book, and I looked at the flap on the back cover. And inside this cover, there was a picture of the author. And again, I thought something was vaguely familiar with the author, but I just couldn't place him. And then it hit me. The author was my college psychology professor. He was a good teacher. He was interesting. He was innovative and well-respected. So my curiosity about the book whetted my appetite even more. And what I discovered in this book, His Needs, Her Needs, opened my eyes to a whole new way of looking at myself and my wife and marriage in general. Well, the author, Dr. Harley, eventually left his professorship at the college where I graduated and went on to establish a chain of marriage counseling clinics. But it bothered Dr. Harley that he was not able to help more couples become truly happy. Dr. Harley spent years trying to understand why marriage counselors almost universally failed at helping to keep marriages together. It was awkward, it was embarrassing for him as a marriage counselor to see so many failed marriages. Well, Dr. Harley's research then led to some discoveries that I want to share with you today. But first, I want to say that today's message would not have been written if it had not have been motivated by the discovery of some of my wife's flaws. My wife is an outstanding person, and ordinarily I would never mention these in front of anyone else, but it's only through marriage that these characteristics have been revealed. First of all, my wife will take glasses from the dishwasher and place them upside down in the cupboard. She says it's to keep the dust out of the clean glasses. I, on the other hand, know that the correct way to put glasses in the cupboard is to put them open end up. So in case there's any residual moisture, they will have an opportunity. It will have to evaporate. Then when making the bed, I've noticed my wife pays no attention whatsoever to the direction that the open end of the pillowcase is placed. I just naturally assumed when we got married that everyone knew that the open end of the pillowcase is always flopped toward the edge of the bed. And then there's the toilet tissue roll. My darling wife routinely installs the paper so that the roll comes off the front of the roll, and I've patiently tried to explain to her that if we place the tissue roll the other way around in the dispenser, then any little children will not be able to readily bat the roll, and unroll the entire roll of tissue. We finally reached an accommodation in our lives regarding our marital discord. Here's how we handle the differences. Whoever empties the dishwasher gets to decide how to put the glasses in the cupboard. Whoever makes the bed gets to decide which direction to place the open end of the pillowcase. And whoever replaces the toilet tissue roll gets to decide which way the paper comes off the roll. Dr. Harley describes the result of his research on emotional needs in marriage in his book, then, His Needs and Her Needs. But before we jump into Dr. Harley's discoveries about human nature and the marital relationship, let's turn to Genesis 1, just to reference the first man and woman. In Genesis 1, verse 26, God said, "Let us make man in our image according to our likeness, and then and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over the cattle, over all the earth, every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." Verse 27, so God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him, male and female, he created them. Well, just to be sure that we didn't miss the point that we were created in God's image, he repeated that fact in Genesis 5, in verses 1 and 2. This is the book of genealogy of Adam. In the day that God created man, he made him in the likeness of God. He created them male and female, and blessed them and called them mankind in the day they were created. So God created mankind after his own image, his own likeness, and with the potential to have the characteristics of God. Well, today we're going to review the Ten Commandments for marriage. But in order to do that, we are going to first examine the top 10 emotional needs of men and women. And as we do that, we're going to see how meeting our emotional needs corresponds to our relationship with God. You may title this message, The Ten Commandments of Marriage. Today's message could be heard on two levels. One is on a purely human plane, on a physical and emotional level, when someone could walk in the door today, care nothing about religion, and still walk away with knowledge that would be helpful in his or her marriage. The other way that this message could be heard and understood is by recognizing this spiritual analogy, to develop a better relationship with God because we have a better understanding of what God expects of us. Well, Dr. Harley, the author of His Needs, Her Needs, found that men and women have the same top 10 emotional needs. However, the top 5 emotional needs for men are different than those 5 top emotional needs for women. In other words, the priority of the emotional needs are different. It's important to understand our destiny, that God refers to his relationship with spiritual Israel as a modern or as a marital relationship, and that Israel is a bride awaiting her husband. We read this in Isaiah 62, verse 5. In Isaiah 62, verse 5, I'm going to be quoting from the New King James, unless otherwise today. And this one is this verse I'm quoting in the Common English Bible. "As a young man marries a young woman, so your sons will marry you with the joy of a bridegroom because of his bride. So your God will rejoice because of you." And then throughout the Bible, God admonishes us to be faithful to him, to be faithful to the truth, not to stray. The powerful language that God uses for someone who forsakes the truth is the same language that he uses to describe someone who is unfaithful to his or her spouse. And it's pretty strong language. We can turn to Ezekiel 16. I'm not going to read it all. I'm just going to refer to Ezekiel 16, the entire chapter, verses 1 through 63. Because it explains God's love for Israel and how Israel frequently spurned God's love to chase after other spiritual lovers, the false gods, and how God equates physical fornication or adultery with spiritual fornication or adultery. Well, I'm going to go through now the top 10 emotional needs for married people and show how these points can help us in our marriages and how they mirror our relationship with God. And the reason for studying these top 10 emotional needs for married people is that if these needs are unmet, then we become candidates for unfaithfulness to our mates. Similarly, if we do not follow God's expectations of us, then we become candidates for straying from God and the truth. So first, here's the top five emotional needs for wives. Number one is affection. God created women. He knows that women need regular affection. Of course, men also need affection, but affection is the highest emotional need for women. Men, unlike God, need a written reminder to love their wives, to give wives the daily affection that they would need. We can read that in Ephesians 5:25. Some men need more than a slight nudge to remember anniversaries, birthdays, or special events. Other men need even more than a nudge because a gentle hint doesn't work. In Ephesians 5:25, God, through the letters of Paul to the Ephesians, said, "Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for us." Now, that's a pretty strong love. The need for wives to have affection is so profound that it often dominates their feelings, it overwhelms or bypasses their other needs. Some women have told me that certain husbands are almost incorrigible in this area, and this is sad, almost to the point of tragedy, because a woman's most important emotional need is affection. The directive for husbands is so strong that it's repeated in Colossians 3:19. Husbands, love your wives, and be not bitter against them. I should probably point out, right here, it's not a very good idea for women to take these two verses from the Bible and bash their husbands over the head with them as reminders to be sure to love them. These verses are meant for men to learn and understand and follow, not for their wives to use in skewering them as if they were meat and vegetables on a kebab. It's hard for men to be spontaneous when his wife asks him if he loves her. I'm reminded of the story of the fellow who had been married for many years but wasn't very expressive to his wife, and she craved so much to hear the words, "I love you." She snuggled up to her husband and asked him the fateful question, "Honey, do you love me?" Whereupon he held up his hand, showed her the wedding ring, and said, "Remember when we got married and I said I loved you?" She said, "Yes," expecting the best. And he said, "Well, if I ever change my mind, I'll let you know." Well, the author, Dr. Harley, doesn't leave anything to chance, so he developed a list of things that otherwise clueless men can do to show affection for their wives. He writes, "Hug and kiss your wife every morning, and tell her that you love her while you're having breakfast together. Kiss her before you leave for work. Call her during the day to see how she's doing. Bring flowers once in a while as a surprise. Get a card for her on special occasions, or get a gift. The gift should be sentimental, not practical. Learn how to shop for a woman." Now, I'm going to interject right here. I'm largely clueless in this area. And it's one of the most toughest jobs that any man will ever have. In my economics class, I play a JCPenney commercial video about how a man got thrown in the proverbial doghouse for buying his wife a vacuum cleaner instead of jewelry for an anniversary. Well, Dr. Harley keeps going. "After work, call her before you leave home so she can know when to expect you. When you arrive home from work, give her a hug and a kiss. Spend a few minutes talking to her about how her day went. Help with dishes after dinner. Hug and kiss her every night before you go to sleep." Just as affection as it is important in marriage, so Christ gave us the example of how he loves his bride, the church. And we'll turn to John 3:16. Jesus Christ loved the church so much that he gave his life for it. And despite our personal waywardness, Jesus Christ continues to remain true and steadfast to us. In John 3:16, perhaps the most popular verse in Protestant America, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish, but should have everlasting life." That's a lot of love. Affection is a woman's most fundamental emotional need. God provides that love and affection for his church. Husbands need to model their behavior accordingly and show affection for their wives. The second most important need for a woman, number two, is conversation. When a couple first begins to date, they just can't talk enough. Usually a courting couple will explore and seemingly talk about everything. They will explore the world with their conversations. And when they get married, the conversation slows down to a crawl, almost to a stop. Scientists have discovered a substance, they think, that causes men to stop talking to their wives. And after generations of research with millions of people, it can now be revealed that the offending substance that causes men to stop talking to their wives is wedding cake. Once men eat wedding cake, it seems that their brain locks up, their vocal cords become almost inoperable. Some of you may have heard of the book, maybe 30 years ago, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, by John Gray. The author so accurately describes how men tend to clam up under duress. They go into their cave to privately reassess the situation and perhaps lick their wounds. And then, while the man is in his cave, hurting but recuperating, his wife comes into the cave and tries to drag him out by having a conversation with him. Of course, the man refuses and then becomes resentful. And the man turns into a fire-breathing dragon and his wife feels burned. It's quite the opposite for a woman when she feels distress. She gets on the telephone with her mother, sister, daughter, friend, or neighbor, and they discuss endlessly every nuance of whatever burden that she's feeling. And although men don't share this same emotional need for conversation to the same degree, men should understand that a woman needs conversation. She thrives on it. It is her survival. Imagine the situation. A man gets up at 4 a.m. in the morning. He brews a pot of coffee, pours it into his thermos bottle. He makes a couple of sandwiches, goes out to the garage to gather up his fishing gear, throws in the back of his pickup truck. He drives across town to his buddy's house where the two of them hook up the boat trailer to the pickup truck. The buddy stows his fishing gear in a cooler in the back of the pickup. And at 5 a.m., the two of them jump in the pickup and drive off to a faraway lake for a day of fishing. They arrive at the boat landing about 6 a.m. They unload the boat from the trailer, remove their fishing gear and cooler from the truck, place it into the boat. One guy parks the pickup while the other guy holds the boat next to the shore. Both guys jump in the boat and they fish all day long. At the end of the day, the two guys reverse the process that they did that morning. They load the boat into the trailer, toss their fishing gear in the back of the truck and head home. They unhook the trailer, sort out the fish, return to their respective homes. By the time that both guys arrive home, neither man has spoken a complete sentence to each other all day long. Just grunts, shrugs, an occasional one-word question or reply. Now I want you to imagine two women doing the same thing. This is a fundamental difference between men and women. Most men see nothing unusual about that scenario. Most women cannot even imagine that such a thing could happen. Conversation does not only involve talking, but in order for a woman to effectively pour her heart out to her husband, he must be willing to listen, to participate in the conversation. After all, God listens to us. In Psalm 62, in verse 8, Psalm 62, 8, and again, I'm reading this from the Common English Bible, "All you people, trust in him at all times. Pour out your hearts before him. God is our refuge." We're urged to have that conversation with God, just as a wife would with her groom. And after hearing his wife, an attentive husband will actually do something about whatever concerns her. After all, God graciously performs for us what we diligently seek from him. In 1 John 5, in verse 14, "Now this is the confidence that we have in him, that if we ask anything according to his will, he hears us." If we turn to the book of Daniel in Daniel 6, we can read about Daniel's response about his conversations with God. And he, as his custom was, he prayed on his knees before God three times a day. And the king said nobody can pray to anybody but the king. So in Daniel 6:13, Daniel was spied on, and the spies responded in Daniel 6:13. And they answered and said before the king, "That Daniel, who is one of the captives from Judah and does not show due regard for you, O king, or the decree you've signed, but makes his petition three times a day." Just as Daniel kept in close contact with God by pouring his heart out to God three times every day, so we should maintain our daily conversation with our God. King David of ancient Israel didn't limit himself to praying three times a day. He was open enough with God to praise God at least seven times per day. We read in Psalm 119, verse 164. Psalm 119, 164. Seven times a day, I praise you because of your righteous judgments. How many of us even talk to our spouses seven times a day, let alone talk to God seven times a day? Conversation is critically important, emotional need. Fortunately, many of us now have text messaging to help us facilitate those difficult conversations from a distance with our spouse. Dr. Harley has conversation tips for husbands and wives, and I want to just go through a few of these and think how we can apply these tips to increasing our conversations with God. And there are pages of these. I'm just going to pick out a few. Conversation tips. Remember how it was when you were dating. You both still need to exhibit that intense interest in each other and in what you have to say, especially about your feelings. I remember when my wife and I were in our dating and courtship phase, she purchased a book, something like 1,000 questions to ask a prospective mate. I found out about that later. And we wrote to each other each day. Number two, a woman has a profound need to engage in conversation about her concerns and interests with someone who, in her perception, cares deeply about her and for her. Number three, men, if your job keeps you away from home overnight or for days, think about changing jobs. If you can't find ways to restore the intimacy of your marriage each time you return from your absence, so your wife can feel comfortable with you again. Number four, get into the habit of spending 15 hours each week alone with your spouse, giving each other undivided attention. Spend much of that time in natural but essential conversation. I'm wondering if a lot of us don't see our spouses even 15 hours a week. That's a heavy one, but his research shows that 15 hours a week is important to invest in that relationship. In other research I've seen, you know how much the average parent spends on one-on-one time with each child in conversation, direct eye-to-eye? About 45 seconds per child per day. So we know it's also not happening in the marital relationships. Remember, number five, most women fell in love with a man who set aside time to exchange conversation and affection with them. And then they stay in love with a man who continues to meet those needs. Anyway, there's a list here of a dozen different conversation tips that I'm not going to go through all, but conversation is huge. It's an important characteristic in a positive relationship. The number three, woman's third highest emotional need is honesty and openness. And it's hard for some men to be open. They're often less conversational and expressive than women, yet it's one of women's highest emotional needs. Remember the example that I gave about from John Gray's book, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus? Men tend to crawl into their caves, not verbalizing or admitting their difficulties. Women, on the other hand, tend to seek out other women with whom they can share. An example of this is that most men will not admit that they have a physical ailment, even when they have a broken leg and the bone is protruding from the skin. Well, is it any wonder on average that women live longer, about 7 years on average, longer than men? Statistics will show that married men live longer than single men because married men have somebody to look after them. However, the same research shows that there's no difference in the lifespan of single women compared to married women because women tend to take care of themselves better than men. Of course, there are exceptions, but those are the statistical averages. Regarding health, it's tough for men to be honest with themselves, much less to be open and honest with their wives. Many years ago, I was helping a friend moving with loading up a household items from storage to a moving van, and it was a hot day. It was sweaty work. We thought we'd be careful not to overdo the exertion. And one of the men who was on the moving crew flopped over, apparently unconscious. My heart was racing when I went over to the body, slumped to the ground. His eyes were open, but when I waved my hand in front of him, there was no reaction. it looked like he couldn't see. He blinked when I asked him if he was okay. And then he answered me saying that he thought he'd be all right. As it turns out, he hadn't been feeling well for a few days, but didn't want to worry his wife, so he joined in on the moving party anyway. In Galatians 6, verse 2, by sharing with one another, in Galatians 6, 2, we can bear each other's burdens, and we're instructed that to bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. We're to help each other out, but how can we help each other out unless we know where they need the help? In James 5, 16, I'm going to read this in the King James Version, in James 5, 16. Confess your faults to one to another and pray for one another that you may be healed. The effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much. It's very difficult to ask for help, but who better to share your burdens with than your closest human companion, your spouse? The fourth highest emotional need for women is financial support. And, of course, the most remembered verse about this is 1 Timothy 5:8. In 1 Timothy 5:8, if anyone does not provide for his own, especially for those of his household, he's denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Well, when we have our spiritual lives in order and we seek God first, God can provide our physical needs. In Matthew 6, verse 31, we read that, do not worry, saying, what shall we eat, what shall we drink, or what shall we wear? For after all these things the Gentiles seek, but your heavenly Father knows that you need all these things. But first seek the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added to you. Well, God takes care of us. All we have to do is put our spiritual lives in order and ask him to guide us in supplying our needs. He gave us the model prayer in Matthew 6 and verse 9. And what does it say in this model prayer? The first couple of verses. In this manner, Matthew 6, 9, in this manner, therefore, pray, our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Verse 11, give us this day our daily bread. And we're talking here not just spiritual food, but physical food as well. We flip the next chapter over in Matthew 7, verses 9 through 11. In Matthew 7, verses 9 through 11, ask and it will be given. Seek and you will find. Knock and it will be opened for you. For everyone who asks receives, and he who seeks finds, and to him who knocks it will be opened. Or what man is there among you, if he asks for bread, will give him a stone? If he asks for a fish, will he give him a serpent? If you then, being evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father, who is in heaven, give good things to those who ask him? It is the nature of our God to supply his children with their needs. Just as a man is made in the image of God, so does man need to follow God's example to supply bread to his family. And just as God provides support for us, so we need to provide support for those who are unable to support themselves. In 1 Timothy 5 and verse 16, the Apostle Paul writes, if any believing man or woman has widows, let them relieve them, and do not let the church be burdened that it may relieve those who are really widows. So limit the responsibility the church has by families taking up the care for their own. In Deuteronomy 24, this principle is laid out. In Deuteronomy 24, verses 19 to 21. And there's a principle in ancient Israel about how to take care of those people who do not have or could not put in a crop. When you reap your harvest in your field and forget a sheaf in the field, you shall not go back to get it. For it shall be for the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow, that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands. When you beat your olive trees, you shall not go over the boughs again. It shall be for the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow. When you gather the grapes of your vineyard, you shall not glean it afterwards. It shall be for the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow. That principle was carried out by Boaz, who took care of the widows that were his responsibility. We read that in the book of Ruth. And if we look at Ruth in chapter 2, and we go through that scenario, there was a relative of Naomi's husband, a man of great wealth of the family of Elimelech. His name was Boaz. So Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, "Please let me go into the field and glean of the grain after him, in whose sight I may find favor." And Naomi said to Ruth, "Go, my daughter." Verse 3, "And she left and went in, gleaned in the field after the reapers, and she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech," or of her deceased husband's relatives. So there's a principle, not just for our family, but our extended family as well, to the extent that we are able. Because God provides not just for us, but for our extended family as well. The fifth need, emotional need for women, is family commitment. A wife wants her husband to be a good father. And to be a good father takes effort. I was extremely fortunate to have a wonderful father. My father died over 15 years ago, yet his constant, continuing presence in his family life is very large. Author Dr. Harley developed a list of what's most commonly admired in a father. And there's a list of about 10 or 13 things. Meals together as a family. Going out for walks or bike rides. Attending religious services. Conducting family meetings. Bringing people together, playing board games together, attending sports or recreation events, reading to the children before bedtime, helping the children with financial planning, helping the children with homework, doing family projects, being certain that they're fun for the children. Our Heavenly Father is just that, our Father. In Matthew 6:9, we've already referred to in the model prayer, "In this manner, therefore, pray our Father in heaven." It begins that way. We are the children of God the Father. In 1 John 3:1, we find a remarkable statement that verifies that God is our Father. In 1 John 3:1, "Behold, what manner of love the Father has bestowed on us that we should be called the children of God." Continuing then on to John 1 and verse 12, we heard it say it again. "But as many as received him, to them he gave the right to become children of God, to those who believe in his name." And finally, in the book of Romans in 8:14, "For as many as are led by the Spirit of God, these are the sons of God." If we go back to that model prayer in Matthew 6, we wouldn't bother praying to God, our Father, if he was unable to deliver. So this top five emotional needs of wives, affection, conversation, honesty and openness, financial support, and family commitment. And then let's look at the top five emotional needs for husbands. This won't take as long. The first need is physical intimacy. Let's look at Genesis in chapter 2. In Genesis 2 and verse 18, I'm not going to read it all, but fundamentally, when God created Eve, he created Eve out of the rib or the side of Adam. And ultimately then, we read in Genesis 2:24, "Therefore a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh." It doesn't sound too complicated. Boy meets girl. Boy and girl fall in love, boy and girl get married, have children, and the cycle of life starts over again. I went to a one-room country schoolhouse as a lad, and I learned this rhyme. I presume most of you have heard it at some point. The saying is as old as the hills. Johnny and Susie sitting in a tree, K-I-S-S-I-N-G. First comes love, then comes marriage, then along comes the baby carriage. For men, this physical intimacy is their highest emotional need. They want their wives to be at one with them. Just as their wives' highest emotional need is affection, these top two emotional needs go hand in hand for an optimal relationship. So when husbands and wives strive to meet each other's top emotional needs, they're able to enjoy a more fulfilling relationship. Similarly, we as church members should look at the fulfilling the expectations of God to be at one with Him. In Ephesians 5, verses 31 and 32, the Apostle Paul spelled it out. For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. Verse 32, this is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church. So we have this relationship between Jesus Christ as the groom and the church as the bride, the importance of becoming one. And here's how God expects us to become one with Him. And I'm not going to read it all, but I'll refer to Leviticus 23, verses 26 through 32, where God points out to Moses the importance of establishing and recognizing the Day of Atonement, a holy day in which we are to become close to God by separating ourselves from our physical needs and focusing on a spiritual unity with God. This at-one-ment is so important that God has set aside one of His annual holy days to remind us of the necessity to be at one with Him. Again, we read what Paul wrote to the Philippians in chapter 1 and verses 2 through 5, and I'm going to summarize it this way. Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus. We have the same mindset that Jesus Christ did. And so just as husbands and wives should be at one with each other in physical intimacy, as our model of our relationship with God, so we should be with our understanding and in a relationship with God as well. The second emotional need for men is recreational companionship. This may be surprising to many gals. When a couple is courting and spending a lot of time together, women may go hunting or fishing with their husband, perhaps they'll go to a ball game together. Maybe she'll follow him around a golf course a time or two. Perhaps they'll play tennis. Whatever the recreational companion or activity, she'll go along because she wants to be close to him. And then she partakes of the dreaded wedding cake, and her interest wanes in pursuing his sports or recreational interests. Years ago, I attended the June wedding of one of the young men in the neighborhood in Minnesota where I grew up. And November was deer hunting season, as it is now, and the young husband so much wanted to take his new bride deer hunting. He purchased all the gear for her, bought her a new hunting rifle. She dressed up in warm camouflage clothes because it can get bitterly cold in November in Minnesota. The young husband bought his bride over to my farm and sat her on a vantage point on a pile of rocks under a tree along a path where deer were known to travel. And then the young husband trudged about a quarter mile away and took up his own position in a hunting stand. After about 15 minutes of sitting on the pile of rocks, a large buck deer with a rack of antlers came along, and the young bride calmly aimed and fired, bringing down the trophy buck. That was the first and the last time that the bride ever went deer hunting with her husband. She thought the entire experience was not very challenging, and she could not imagine what men ever got out of hunting or why it took so long for them to ever bag a deer. Well, I venture to say that most women do not recognize it, but the recreational companionship is the second highest emotional need for a man. And if his wife doesn't fill the need, then he'll be off with his fishing buddies or hunting buddies. The man will be frustrated until the need is met. Of course, deer hunting is not everyone's favorite. A list, Dr. Harley proposes that a couple find recreational activities that they can do together to help them draw closer to each other, rather than for them to each go off in their own separate directions. And my wife loves to roller skate, and she's good at it. And if I'm careful, I can survive on roller skates. She can skate backwards far better than I can skate forwards. And I know that roller skating is an enjoyable activity for her, and so I've endeavored to try to become a better skater, and so we could enjoy some of that time together, rather than just spend increasingly amounts of our time apart pursuing separate interests. My wife does like roller skating. At the same time, I like going to county fairs and state fairs. Years ago, we jumped in a car on Friday before Labor Day weekend, and we drove all day to Minnesota. We went to church in Minneapolis the next day. And then the Sunday before Labor Day, we visited the Minnesota State Fair, the largest state fair in the country. And for the first time in her life, my wife saw what it was like to see 100,000 people in one place at one time. A few of the streets were so crowded, you could probably have walked on the tops of heads from one side of the street to the next. There was a lot to see and do. Over the years, we've learned to share our recreational activities. God also enjoys recreational activities. And as we read Genesis chapter 1, we'll go through a delightful and splendid summary of how God created the earth and everything in it. And I'm going to point to Genesis 1, verses 1 through 31, but I'm only going to point to a phrase that's used from time to time in that chapter. And that is in verse 10, "And God saw that it was good." And then we turn to verse 12. "And God saw that it was good." And then we go to verse 18. And God saw that it was good. And then verse 21. "And God saw that it was good." And then verse 25. "And God saw that it was good." And then we go down to verse 31. "Then God saw everything he had made, and indeed it was very good." Mankind, like his creator, like to make things and increase his knowledge. There is a constant thirst for more knowledge, and the desire increases as we draw close to the end of this age. In Daniel 12, verse 4, we read about that increasing desire. In Daniel 12, verse 4, "But you, Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book until the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall increase." Wives should work to understand and meet their husbands' need for recreational companionship, and husbands should consider their wives' recreational needs as well. The third most important emotional need of a man is an attractive spouse. Dr. Harley defines attractiveness as what you do with what you have. Now, it's a known fact that men are visually oriented creatures, and women learn from an early age to play to men's weaknesses. And as a result, women are constantly dressing up to look good while the men stand in awe. And there are far more women's clothing stores than men's clothing stores. There are far more women's shoes that sold than men's shoes. And of course, a great deal more jewelry is sold to women than to men, not to mention cosmetics, lotions, hair care, and nail care items. Most women seem to know that men look for and are proud of an attractive spouse. Men feel a sense of self-worth and accomplishment when their wives take the time and effort to care for themselves. In the same way, God wants his church to be attractive and without blemish. We read in the Song of Solomon in chapter 4 and verse 7, in fact, that entire chapter is about God wanting his church to be attractive to him. I'm reading this out of the New English translation. "You are altogether beautiful, my darling. There is no blemish in you." Some versions will say taint. In Ephesians 5:27, "That he might present himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she should be holy and without blemish." We're speaking of the church, to be cleaned up, and each one of us are part of that church, to be cleaned up so that we can be attractive to God, to the wedding with Jesus Christ. In James 1 and verse 27, in James 1, 27, "Pure and undefiled religion is this, before God and the Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their trouble, and to keep oneself unspotted from the world." It's probably one of the saddest things to see a woman who doesn't make good decisions. In Proverbs 11, 22, I'm going to read this in the King James, in Proverbs 11, 22, "As a jewel of gold and a swine's snout, so is a fair woman which is without discretion." So they may look attractive on the surface, but the decision-making may not turn out so well. God views attractiveness differently than man views attractiveness. We have the example of Samuel, who was looking to anoint a future king of Israel, in 1 Samuel 16, verse 7. And in 1 Samuel 16, 7, "But the Lord said to Samuel," when he's looking over men to anoint, who to anoint, "Do not look at his appearance or his physical stature, because I have refused him. For the Lord does not see man as man sees, for man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart." Samuel was going down the list of sons of Jesse. He said, surely this must be the one. No, maybe this one is the one. And God said, "Look, I look on the heart." Husbands want their wives to be attracted to them, and God wants the church to be attractive to him. The fourth most important emotional need for men is domestic support. A man values peace and quiet when he gets home. However, when he arrives at the door, he's often besieged with problems of the day from his wife and children. Domestic tranquility or peacefulness in the house is a precious commodity to the husband. Some couples have learned to prevent this situation from developing by making the first 30 minutes upon arrival home to be a pleasant time, a time free from troubles of the day. Distribution of household duties is often a bone of contention. The husband pulls out his Bible and quotes Proverbs 31, verse 27. And again, I'll quote in the Proverbs 31, 27 in the Common English Bible. And the husband quotes this to his wife. "She is vigilant over the activities of her household. She doesn't eat the food of laziness." While the wife then throws up her hands in exasperation, wondering how he could be such an uncaring and unhelpful cad. So she throws out the next verses 28 and 29 in Proverbs 31. "Her children bless her. Her husband praises her. Many women act competently, but you surpass them all." Well, he's been shown his, he didn't do that. So he becomes angry and confused that all of his hard work all day isn't appreciated when he gets home. And she feels similarly unappreciated or overwhelmed and disrespected. So he quotes Proverbs 21 and verse 9. Again, in the Common English Bible, "Better to live on the edge of a roof than with a contentious woman in a large house." And then he goes on to Proverbs 27:15. "The constant dripping on a rainy day and a contentious woman are all alike." Well, in reality, the wife most likely wanted some husbandly affection and adult conversation after a day with kids. At the same time, the husband just wanted to plunk down in an easy chair and vegetate for a few minutes. But a verbal battle develops. She tells him, "Go ahead, live in the corner of the rooftop," if that's the way he feels about her. How much different would life be if they understood that what the other person needed at the time, what they needed, instead of letting their imaginations and their mouths run wild? So the fifth most important characteristic for a man, or the emotional need, is admiration. Every man wants to be admired by his wife. He wants to be thought of as the king of his own castle, the emperor of his realm. When a man is admired, he feels respected, and that motivates him to do even more. If women knew this secret about men and how it motivates them, wives would find their things to admire about their husbands to the point that the husband would wear himself to exhaustion just to keep up with his avid wife's admiration. The trait of admiration must be taught. In Titus chapter 2 and verse 4, "And that they," meaning the older women, "may teach the young women to be sober, how to love their husbands, to love their children." So this is a taught thing on how to do this. Admiration is a component of love. When a wife shows admiration for her husband, then he's more than willing to push himself to meet his wife's needs. Our Creator God is worthy of admiration. We are called upon to love God in a profound way. In Deuteronomy 6, in verse 5, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength." That's repeated in Deuteronomy 11, 1, similarly, and reinforced in Deuteronomy 11, 13, And it shall be that if you earnestly obey my commandments, which I command you today, and love the Lord your God, and serve me with all your heart, with all your mind, and then it goes through a long list of blessings. In the New Testament, we read in Mark 12 and verse 10 about that same reiteration, that same statement, loving the Lord your God with all your heart, your soul, and your mind, and your strength. If we do love God so profoundly, then we are going to admire what God has done for us, what he is doing for us, and what he promises to do for us. So men's top five emotional needs are physical intimacy, recreational companionship, an attractive spouse, domestic support, and admiration. Author Dr. Harley summarizes Less Than Happy Marriage with this statement. If I do not try to meet my spouse's needs, and she or he does not try to meet mine, we may be technically married, but we will not know the happiness and fulfillment that marriage should provide. In Neil Clark Warren, and this isn't in my notes, but I recall reading in his book on the triumphant marriage, they did surveys of people, how many people were actually happily married. And through exhaustive surveys, they came up with about 10% of marriages considered themselves happy. A certain percent didn't know why they were together, and the rest of them were just getting along. In his research, Dr. Harley, in his book, His Needs, Her Needs, the research is clear. When husbands and wives do not meet each other's emotional needs, they're ripe for unfaithfulness and infidelity. However, when we do our best to meet our mate's needs, then our lives are more ordered and happy, and our own needs are more likely to be fulfilled. Similarly, when we do not perform our spiritual responsibilities, we are ripe to become unfaithful to God. This Bible is replete with the admonitions against spiritual and physical fornication. The Bible is also filled with hope and joy for fulfilling relationships if we follow God's way. Well, now that we've reviewed the top 10 emotional needs of husbands and wives, I want to close with what I call the 10 Commandments of Marriage. You may want to follow along with the real 10 Commandments in Deuteronomy 5 or in Exodus 20, because I'm going to use that same 10 Commandments as a guide. Number one, have no other gods before God. In this context, have no other husband or wife except your own. If everyone invested as much time in their marriage as they did planning a summer vacation, their summer vacations would be a whole lot happier. Number two, do not make a graven image of God. In this context, treasure the real spouse, not a substitute for your spouse. How often do we see in other people how one spouse keeps busy with activities that takes them away from their own husband or wife? Commandment three, do not use God's name in vain, meaning speak kindly and properly about your spouse. There is no benefit to call the husband the old goat, to refer to the wife as the old battle axe. Use Proverbs 31, which says to praise our mates. Commandment 4, remember the Sabbath to keep it holy. Your life will be longer and happier if you marry and stay within the faith. God's plan is spelled out in the Sabbath and the holy days, and how delightful it is when we're able to share life's hopes and dreams with our spouse. In any event, regardless of our marital situation, the Sabbath is our refuge to spend time with God. The fifth commandment, honor your father and mother. We should know that however we treat our parents is how our children are going to treat us. It also has a bearing on how our children think of God. Commandment six, do not murder. In this context, uphold your spouse's good name by showing yourself worthy of that name. Don't denigrate your relationship by spreading around the mistakes of your mate. Commandment 7, do not commit adultery. Shortly put, remain faithful to God and his truth. And for young people, physically this means being true and faithful to your future spouse before you ever get married. Live a life that you can be pleased to share with your eventual husband or wife. Commandment 8, do not steal. What that means is make time for your spouse and treasure that time with your spouse. How many lives have been lived in quiet desperation because one or the other spouse had other things to do? Commandment 9, do not bear false witness or lie. Be open and honest with your spouse. A couple who is at ease with each other and who are meeting each other's needs will be open and honest with each other. And Commandment 10, don't covet. Be happy with your own spouse and don't interfere with the happiness of other couples. Another way of putting it is, don't touch a hot stove or you'll get burned. Consider the consequences of your actions. Thought precedes sin, so quench the wrong thoughts and prevent them from becoming a problem. Be happy with your own spouse, just as you become happy with the truths and the knowledge of God. Well, today we've covered the top 10 emotional needs for men and for women. We've learned how we can become better husbands and wives by diligently finding ways to meet our spouse's needs. We've seen how God fulfills our spiritual needs if only we seek Him, and we've looked at our responsibilities before God. And lastly, we've applied the Ten Commandments to our married lives. And when we follow the admonitions of God, we will be blessed in our personal, temporal lives, and will be blessed in our spiritual lives. I'd like to close with what God told Moses how to instruct Aaron by asking for a blessing on the children of Israel. We can read this in Numbers 6, verses 22 through 27. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make His face shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up His countenance upon you and give you peace.